Hello and welcome to the CISS podcast. This is the On the Spot series by China Forum. In this series, we return to the platform of international forums and webinars where leading minds in academia, government, business, technology, and media deliver novel, collaborative responses to the global issues of the day.
Hello, and welcome to CISS Podcast, On the Spot series. This is Bei Bei with China Forum. At a time when a growing number of regional conflicts have led to further international tensions, the recent phone call between top leaders of China and the United States has drawn wide attention to whether the two global powers can inject some stability into the world. Are decades of globalization and relative world peace coming to an end? Are we moving toward a second Cold War and seeing a replay of the 1930s? What is the root cause of global instability? Is it more of an economical or political nature? Today on our program, we have Professor Da Wei to share his views on the trend of international relations. Professor Da Wei is the director of CISS Tsinghua University, and I caught up with him on the sidelines of the 6th Forum on Security and Strategy.
Thank you, Professor Da Wei, for taking the time to join our interview. One of the topics for this forum on strategy and security is called 1930s Redux, the international order and strategic choices of major powers. So the 1930s was marked by the Great Depression, which led to the Second World War. Now, we know that world affairs isn't looking great right now, but are things that bad that we are comparing it to the 1930s?
Actually, in today's discussion, in this conference, most of the experts, they didn't agree with the to oversimplify the analogy using the 1930s to compare today's international politics. Having said that, we are facing a very uncertain and chaotic, or I could say transitional period. So when people say 1930 redux, I think what in my mind is, you know, 1930s was a decade that actually between two world wars, right? And so the First World War, it's already finished, but the world is moving toward the Second World War. Now, are we in a transitional period from the First Cold War to the Second Cold War? I mean, of course, from late 1940s to, let's say, 1989, that was the Cold War, Soviet Union and the United States. Then after that, 1990s and the first decade of this century, we enjoy this kind of peace dividend. Right? So at that time, people tended to believe that this is something normal. This is something forever.
Like my generation.
Yes,
that's our
exactly.
Belief.
Yeah. But now we gradually realize probably that's not a normal thing. That's something maybe a more chaotic, more pessimistic situation or scenario, I will say, is something common. While the peaceful, globalized, interdependent, interconnected world that we witnessed in past 30, I mean, from 1990s to very recent, maybe 5 years ago,
right,
maybe that's something abnormal.
So peace is not the default state.
Yes, exactly. We cannot take it for granted. And now many people believe that actually we are moving back to a normal situation.
And
probably we are moving back to the Second Cold War.
Okay.
Of course, this is very different from the first. I mean, there are so many differences, but the Second World War was very different from the First World War. So no matter from the root cause to the weapon they used, the players in the outcome, totally different. But we call them two world wars.
I think
so, yes.
My generation is sadly waking up to this fact, especially growing up in China.
Yeah.
Like peace is a given.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we may think that will continue forever. That's something natural. We will believe that our life is better than our parents and our kids' life will be better than ours, right?
Right.
Now, I'm not saying it's wrong, but I mean, it's doubtful.
There are uncertainties.
Yeah, we cannot take it for granted. So I think this is what the 1930 redux is about. This is with a question mark.
Right, it's not definite.
With a question mark. I think we are facing danger, a kind of danger that maybe we are moving towards the Second Cold War. Then the current decade could be a transitional period like 1930s.
So when we talk about the 1930s, people think of the Great Depression. and the down spiral from the economic troubles contributed to serious political and humanitarian crises. But regarding the troubles we're seeing today, do you think they're more economical or political or a mixture of?
Sometimes it's hard to attribute very complicated phenomena to one reason, right?
Mm.
But if you ask me to pick one reason, only one reason, I will still say the economy is very, very important.
You think it's more important than the political reason?
I think political changes, this is my personal view, I could be wrong, but I mean the political changes are kind of outcome of economic changes. I think the economic relations, for example, from 1980s to first decade of this century was kind of globalized era, right? Every country put the economic efficiency as a top priority.
Mm.
All the governments believe that the economic welfare is the most important task they need to pursue.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to pursue the economic efficiency, probably you will welcome those globalization or economic interdependence to utilize the so-called comparative advantages. Different countries have different advantages. So let's trade. Let's have free trade. Mm-hmm. Let's have free investment. I think in that period, all different countries, they cooperate. They interconnect to each other. We experienced that period of time.
But what changed now? People still want better
lives. But the problem is when you have this very interconnected, globalized economy, not all the people benefit from that process equally.
I see.
I mean, for example, particularly in the developed world, part of the middle class feel they were lagging behind. Mm-hmm. Or even in developing countries like China, during that period, we can see the byproduct of the side effect of the globalization, for example, air pollution.
Mm-hmm.
For example, like corruption, this kind of thing. And many people in China asking, should we just stay there producing shoes and t-shirts?
Mm.
Can we produce airplanes? Can we produce computers or cell phones, right?
Mm.
Actually, China has been quite successful in that regard.
Right.
But of course, the Western country are not happy about that. And they believe that China using its own institutional advantage to compete with the Western country, they think it's not equally not fair. But anyway, for whatever reason, I mean, different countries suddenly realize there are something maybe sometimes more important than economic development or efficiency, let's say national security. Sometimes we just realize that we cannot sacrifice the national security. All the American politicians keep on saying that the jobs, right? The employment thing is very important. They believe it's more important than efficiency. They want to keep the job in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Or during COVID, that also reminds people that the supply chain, you cannot just rely on the international supply chain. Sometimes bad things could happen. Maybe it's not because some malign intention of some other countries. Sometimes natural disaster or the pandemic could interrupt this supply chain.
Mm-hmm.
Then can you really rely on the other country on those very important products?
Mm-hmm.
Probably you cannot. For example, basic medicines, right? Every country needs this. So one day, if I wake up, something bad happened, the other country cannot supply us that very basic, very important materials or products, then we are not safe.
Mm.
So I mean, now I think both developed world and developing country are questioning this assumption that we had held for a very long time. That is the economic efficiency is the top priority.
Right.
Today, this is a questionable assumption. If that changed, then you need to change the economic relations.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have trade wars.
Mm-hmm.
You have technological wars. And these changes then, of course, will influence the political side and others. So we securitize everything.
I
because
see.
Security has become more important than the economy, then you securitize everything. I will say if you ask me to pick one reason, of course, it's very complicated. But,
right, and interrelated.
But I think these economic changes, with the, I would say the whole world is leaving those new liberalism or globalization consensus we enjoyed in past three decades.
So I also sense a trend from hope to fear.
Yes.
Psychology-wise. Yeah.
People
are hope now they're fearing of things, possibilities that might not be secure for each country.
Yeah, of course, because as I said, this economic benefit is not distributed very fairly and evenly, I mean, in different countries. That's
right.
True. And for countries like China, sometimes it's hard to understand this because basically China did very well in past three decades. Of course, China also have these social gaps, right, in China. Generally speaking, most Chinese
are better off.
Yeah, we're better off.
Yes.
We are better off. So no matter you are rich or you are poor, basically we all support this globalization. But it's not true in other countries.
I see.
Yeah, in most developed countries and including some developing countries. Some developing countries, they feel that the whole country become poorer. So
the opportunity are not equally shared.
Yeah.
In a talk you'll give early, the topic is China and the US and the international order, with a question at the end. Are we moving toward parallel systems? Can you tell us what this parallel systems is referring to?
Again, during those three decades I described from 80s, particularly from 90s, but start from 80s to very recent history, I would say. Basically, the entire human being live in the same single international system. In China, we say this is a UN-centered, international law-based international system.
Mm-hmm.
For example, this is a UN-centered, right? You have Security Council and you have WTO take care of the trade system. You have WHO take care of public health.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a unified, I would say, even single system. Mm-hmm. But that only started, I would say, officially after the end of the Cold War. From 1990s. Before that, that was the Cold War structure. During the Cold War structure, we have two parallel systems. That is US-led system and the Soviet-led system. So at that time, they have two confrontational ideologies,
mm-hmm.
right? Communism versus capitalism. They have two military blocks. That is NATO and the Warsaw Military Pact. Then they have parallel economic system.
Mm-hmm.
The West, they are interdependent economies, while for the socialist bloc, Soviet bloc, they have their own economic bloc. They have their own trades. So they don't have trade. They don't have investment to each other. And the two military blocs view the other side as enemy and prepare for a war.
Mm-hmm.
The two ideology believe that they will bury the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So those are parallel world systems. So after the collapse of the Soviet Union, the whole world entered a unified system. And no matter it's China, the US, or Russia, we all live in this. And actually, a lot of countries, including China and the US, I think we benefit from this system. But now we are facing a potential danger. At least now we are witnessing kind of fragmentation of this system. For instance, the major power relations become very, very confrontational. Not only China, US, look at the Russia, the US,
mm-hmm.
or Russia, Europe. Right, they are very, very confrontational. And those international organizations are not very well functioned. And we are witnessing some countries doing something just following their own will. They just tend to ignore the international laws or rules or norms. So the whole international order is splitting, it's fragmented. Of course, different scenarios ahead, but one scenario is probably we're moving back towards two parallel systems, just like during the Cold War.
But this time, two or three?
That's a very good question. Yeah, maybe three or even more. I mean, before 2023, I will say the world is moving towards two systems because of the Ukraine war. So it becomes kind of like the US, Europe, and maybe Japan, Korea on one side, and China, maybe Russia and some other country on the other side. So we are moving towards these two blocks.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's more complicated. For instance, the emergence of the global south, those developing countries, they have their own voices.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own different views. And after the conflict in the Gaza erupted, I think now it's more complicated. I mean, Europe have different view with the US, for example, on this, on the Middle East. Then it's more fragmented. It's not split into two systems. It's probably moving towards, I don't know how many, but three or four. But it could also be parallel. Right, parallel system does not necessarily mean two systems, right? But they do not interconnect with each other. They confront with each other, and they have different set of rules, and they have their own internal circulation in the system, but they don't have the external one.
It's a period of turbulence.
We're
witnessing right now.
Yeah. So the title of my lecture, I said parallel system, but still with a question mark.
Mm.
Just like 1930 Redux, I think.
The question mark.
We are not sure if that will happen. I hope it will not, but we are facing that possibility.
I see. Next question is regarding U.S. election. What will be the implication of a Trump or Biden win in terms of America's foreign policy towards China, in your opinion?
Okay. First of all, none of them have already gained the nomination.
Mm.
I mean, they are still on their way. Of course, I believe, or most of people believe, they will have the nomination. But we need to wait until for the party's National Congress in this summer. But anyway, let's assume the two of them get the nomination later this year. Generally speaking, people believe that if Biden have his second term, we will see more continuity. Of course, because he is the president, right? Right now. So probably I think he will continue his current policies, that is competing with China, but at the same time, talk to China and on some issues working with China. I think we will continue to see those technological limits, you know, on China, try to restrict China from obtaining those very advanced technology and
high fence.
Yeah. So at least the small yard high fence thing will continue. I don't know if the yard will be even larger or smaller, but I'm quite sure that he will have his yard. But at the same time, I think since last November, President Xi met with President Biden in San Francisco, the two countries started to talk to each other and try to stabilize the bilateral relations. I think so far we have done a good job. The bilateral relations is much more stable, I will say now, than comparing with 2 years ago or 3 years ago. Probably I would say this is the best time in past 5 years.
Really?
I mean, it's not a good time, but I mean, it's not so bad. Of course, it's fragile. But I mean, we will see the continuity of Biden. But if Trump wins his second term, I think the whole world is watching on this possibility. Basically, my answer is I don't know. nobody knows what is President Trump is thinking right now. And nobody knows who will join his team, who will be the Secretary of State or Defense or Treasury. We really don't know. And those people probably in the future who will join his team will probably be some people that we really don't know now. We don't know their beliefs. We don't know their policies. And President Trump, I think he likes to keep others guessing what is his policy. But something he already talked about, like higher tariff.
Decoupling.
Yeah, actually, I'm not sure if that can be implemented or not. But if that implement 60% of tariff on all Chinese product export to the US, if 60%, I think it means decoupling. Because you cannot do trade with 60% of tariff. And of course, he also talked about 10% tariff for all the products that the US imports for the whole world, not only aiming at China, it's for the whole world. He's also talking about something else. And so I think at least the three things we need to watch. Actually, I don't think that's only limited to China-US relations. First, I think the US will have very big challenge domestically. How will the Democrats react to Trump's victory? How will the establishment, I mean, President Trump and his team are talking about changing those establishment in Washington, D.C., fire those civil servants, replace with some his loyalties. I don't know if that happened. Let's imagine what will the establishment in Washington, D.C., what will they do? How will they react to that? I think that's a nuclear bomb for the U.S. constitutional system, I will say. This is the first thing. The other thing is the U.S. alliance. What will the NATO country, for example, the European country, how will they view this? And will President Trump force Ukraine to surrender, let's say, to end the conflict in Ukraine? If that happened, what will the European country think? I don't know. And what will Japan, South Korea, those U.S. allies, what will they think? I think that's a big challenge for the U.S. alliance system. That's quite interesting, I will say. Then the third thing is China-US. So yes, China-US relations will face tremendous challenges if President Trump wins. But I will say it's not the biggest challenge we will see. I think the U.S. domestic politics, the U.S. alliance system will experience much more serious challenge. I call it a shock wave of atomic bomb. The first round of the shock wave is a domestic
one. Will be felt domestic.
Yeah. The second is U.S. foreign policy to its allies. The third will be China-US.
Well, I see U.S. allies watching on tiptoe.
I think,
see how things will unfold.
Exactly. I think everyone is watching, and I think they've already begun to think about that or talk about that. And maybe several months later, they will do something to prepare in that scenario.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that will be a big change.
What about the retirement of Victoria Nuland and the coming in office of Kirk Campbell as the Deputy Secretary of State? Because some people are saying that they detect a shift in U.S. foreign policy with a Russian hawk leaving office and a China hawk coming in. What's your opinion on this?
I don't think so, to be honest.
You don't think U.S. is looking past Ukraine now? Maybe
I don't think
pivoting?
So. I don't know the exact reason why Ms. Nuland left this position and why President Biden chose Kurt Campbell for that Deputy Secretary of State. I don't know the reason, but my hunch is that's just for bureaucratic reasons. It's not a strategic one. We cannot explain everything from a strategic one, like it's like a chessboard. Then President Biden wants to move China there, move Russia here. I don't think so. Probably for bureaucratic reason, for personal reason. I think I would tend to believe that kind of explanation. And moreover, what I want to say is the U.S. foreign policy, no matter it's the policy to Russia, Ukraine, or to China, is not decided by one person.
That's true. Not
by Victoria Nuland or by Kurt Campbell. They are, of course, very high-profile officials. But regarding China, I think there is already a bipartisan consensus. No matter they have Kurt Campbell there or not, I mean, the policy will continue. It's the same. Of course, different party, different president may have different approach. But basic framework, I think the same.
So you think we shouldn't read into too much?
Yeah, I think we should not. Yeah, I think there is a consensus if you compare with Russia and with China from the perspective of American decision makers. I think the consensus is, first, China is a bigger challenge or threat, you can even say, much bigger than Russia. Russia is more or less about military, about nuclear, or about its security situation in the neighboring area. But China is about military, ideology, diplomacy, politics, economy, technology, about everything. China is a comprehensive one. The other consensus is Russia is a more, I would say, imminent threat to the U.S. because the U.S. believes Russia is doing something right now, right? In Ukraine or in other countries, but China has not. They believe that China has the potential to do that. Or some people believe China have the intention to do that. But I think it's a fact that China has done nothing. So China is a much bigger but less imminent
challenge,
threat, I will say. Yeah, but Russia is a smaller but imminent.
Last time we talked a couple of months ago, you mentioned that even though the U.S. was in the Ukraine war and also Gaza, Middle East conflict has started, but you said, you know, U.S. has the strength to deal with them all. Does that opinion still stand today, a few months into?
I think the U.S. have the strength to deal with them simultaneously. The challenge is the U.S. first is too divided.
Domestically.
I mean, the Republicans and Democrats obviously have different view over those two crises you mentioned, Ukraine and the Middle East. They have totally different idea. And among ordinary people, I think, I would say the majority of American people still support Ukraine. But on the Middle East issue, I think it's very, very divided. Among the ordinary American, it's divided. Another thing is, I think the ordinary people in the U.S. have a very, I will say, stronger and stronger reluctance to support the foreign intervention and obligation. I think the U.S. in the United States, there is a strong sentiment of isolationism. I'm not saying that U.S. is diving into isolationism, but you can feel that kind of sentiment. People are tired of this kind of international intervention.
I can understand.
After the end of the Cold War. So the ordinary people are asking, why should we spend so much money? Why should we devote the lives of the young people, men, women, in somewhere remote from the United States? Why should we just be that single superpower?
Police of the world.
Yeah. I think people are kind of tired of
that. I can understand that. I mean,
yeah.
As I mentioned, my generation grew up in peace and growing prosperity, and we enjoyed that. We want our children to enjoy that.
Yeah.
And it's same for the American people.
Yeah, it does not make sense to send your kids to somewhere actually you never know that country or you don't know the people. I mean, this is a sentiment among ordinary Americans. So you can see.
I sympathize with that.
Yeah. Then that will erode the support of those, no matter you say, dealing with those crises or managing or solving those problems. I think the problem of the U.S. is not it lacks the strength, but I mean, this divide and the reluctance is eroding their willingness.
I see. Yeah. Regarding regional powers like Japan, South Korea, India, and Australia, how do you see the interaction between regional tension in, let's say, Asian Pacific in the context of the global competition between the two major powers?
I think when there are global conflicts, all the conflicts among those bigger countries like China, Russia, the US, usually the whole world will become more, you will see more crisis because the world will losing its bind. You know, those major powers, sometimes they can bind the smaller or middle powers. But when that bind loosed, then probably we'll see more conflicts. And we already see that, no matter in Ukraine or in the Middle East, and actually in others like in Syria and like in Korean Peninsula. We don't have a conflict now, but the tension is high.
There's potential.
So I think those regional countries suffered from that too. So it's one thing I want to say. Secondly, I will say the power, the strength of the middle power is also something noteworthy.
The middle power.
Yeah, middle power. Korea, for example, like Iran, like Indonesia, or Turkey, let's say. Even sometimes quite small country like Qatar or UAE, they're small country, but they are playing quite important role internationally. I mean, because this world is becoming more and more chaotic and uncertainty, I think those middle powers are playing a bigger role.
I see.
And it's quite interesting. They are not just a follower of the major power. They have their own vision, their own value, their own interest. So they will pursue their own policy agendas.
Is this something different, let's say, from the 1930s or from the first Cold War, that the rest of the world seems to be more awake and also stronger?
I think so. I think the other end of the situation is during the Cold War. It's very disciplined. The whole world is disciplined in these two camps, right? Because there are two superpowers. But when you don't have superpowers, I don't think now in the world we have superpowers any longer.
Definitive superpowers.
Yeah, I don't think so. Even the US, I think, is losing its influence. Then you will see more and more players on the international stage. Middle powers, non-governmental organizations, terrorists, I think they are all playing their roles. So that will make the world even more chaotic because you have a lot of different players and sometimes we are not very familiar with them. And so that's one of the characteristics of today's international system.
But this also gives space
for
smaller countries to develop and find their own.
Diversity is always something I think justified. I mean, those middle powers, smaller countries, they need to be respected. They should be listened to.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that's a good thing. But the challenge is that will be more chaotic. You will hear more voices. You will see more actions. Like it or not, this is the situation that
we're going through right now.
Yes.
Hopefully we will have a stronger, unified international system.
Sooner or later, I think this international politics kind of like a pendulum. It's moving from a quite unified, peaceful time to a very chaotic one. Then maybe, I don't know how long, but let's say 2 decades later, 3 decades later, maybe it will swing back. We need to be patient. And sooner or later, I think we will rebuild some kind of system. I hope it will be a better system. Yes.
Well, thank you so much for your insights.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you. That was my conversation with Professor Da Wei from the Department of International Relations at Tsinghua University, and also director of CISS. Please stay tuned for more enlightening interviews in this series. Thank you for listening.